The Guardian.
Welcome to Politics Weekly Extra. I'm Jonathan Friedland. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times on this podcast. When it comes to US politics, I'm a worrier. And now you can see why. I don't think anybody would deny that the last 24 hours have pretty much vindicated my tendency for angst. Despite stable polling numbers for months, a consistent national lead of 8 percentage points by election day for Joe Biden over Donald Trump, things did not quite go to plan. We did not see the old map swept away by a blue wave as Democrats toppled Republican bastions in the likes of Texas or Ohio or Iowa. Instead, the scenario projected by what you might call the more skeptical political minds, the worriers like me, was to prove true. The election was not a landslide, but a nail biter. And as we record now, it's come down to a handful of states. Due to rules imposed by Republican lawmakers, it's taking election officials a lot longer to count those votes than many would like. All of which has infuriated one Donald Trump, who in the middle of the night, or first thing this morning, UK time, staged a campaign event in the White House, a practice which is against the law, by the way, to issue the message he'd been preparing for months. Voter fraud is happening, he said, and the only solution is to stop counting the votes, at least in those places where he was ahead. In places where he was behind, that was fine. You could carry on counting to give him a chance to catch up. He also falsely claimed that he'd already won the election, which is 100% not true. The president is wrong, and many, including on his own side, were stunned and horrified by that speech. So, with all that in mind, where on earth do things stand now? To try to make sense of it all, I'm joined by The Guardian's Washington Bureau Chief, David Smith. David, I know you're a bit of a night owl, even at the best of times, but have you managed to get any sleep at all in the last 24 hours?
Hi. Yeah, I've got about 5 hours, actually. Went to bed about 6 a.m., really with a realization that when I woke up, we probably still wouldn't know the definitive winner of the presidential election. And indeed, that's how it's turned out. The agony goes on.
Now, as you say, not much had moved on by the time you got up. There was, though, a small chance that we'd reach the requisite number of 270 electoral college votes for one candidate. That's the winning post, the finishing post, in those first 24 hours after the election. As we speak, it hasn't yet happened. Nevertheless, that didn't stop, as I mentioned, didn't stop Donald Trump declaring victory.
This is a fraud on the American public. Yes. This is an embarrassment to our country. Yes. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
We knew it was a strong possibility that Trump would question the validity of ballots being counted after election day. But Dave, what did you think of that speech? I think it was about 2 a.m. your time. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think as many American political commentators have noted, it was a very dark, one of the most dangerous, illegitimate, disgraceful speeches ever made by an American president. And without parallel in history in a presidential election for either candidate to declare victory in that way, to accuse people of fraud with absolutely no basis, to say that they're going to go to court. One of those classic moments, you know, that's like the overused phrase, shocking but not surprising. Trump had previewed this strategy openly, as he tends to do pretty much everything. We knew it was coming. That didn't make it any less shocking. And it really sort of tees up one of the nightmare scenarios about this election, which is a prolonged legal battle that could also see protests in the streets with the potential for violence.
Joe Biden had his own response, and he got it in there earlier to deliver his own response to the night's voting.
We believe we're on track to win this election. Yes. We knew because of the unprecedented early vote and the mail-in vote, that it's going to take a while. We're going to have to be patient until the hard work of tallying the votes is finished. And it ain't over till every vote is counted. Every ballot is counted.
at that stage, we didn't know what we now know, and I think has been posted just in the few minutes before we speak, that it's now official that Joe Biden has received more votes than any other presidential candidate in history. He was going for the kind of moral high ground there. It was interesting that after both Biden and Trump had spoken, quite a few figures on the right, even on Fox News, in effect took sides with Biden and said that Trump had been wrong.
This is an extremely flammable situation, and the president just threw a match into it. He hasn't won these states.
Yes, there are some things that when Trump does them, even Republicans, even conservatives, think, okay, you've gone too far this time, and they push back. And that happened a month or two ago when Trump floated the idea of postponing this election because of the coronavirus pandemic. And even Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate Majority Leader, who's normally loyal, ruled that out. But you also have to look who's not saying anything. I think the jury is still out on if this does become a protracted battle. Will many Republicans still remain silent or even take Trump's side if he's determined to fight these results? I'm not overly encouraged yet. I mean, it's good to see some criticism, but we'll have to wait and see.
And also, I suppose contingent on that is what the eventual outcome of this whole contest is, because there was a view that even, let's say he does lose, but loses narrowly, even that won't empower or embolden, is more the word, congressional Republicans and senior Republicans to take a stand against him and against Trumpism, because he won't have been thoroughly repudiated by the electorate. The very fact he did win the likes of Florida and Texas and elsewhere, Ohio, means that actually Trumpism is something still that senior Republicans would fear. They feel they still need to tiptoe around him and his movement, because he did, even if he loses, we obviously don't know as we speak now, but he did, you know, he didn't do badly enough for them to feel confident attacking him.
That's right. I think that's one of the big stories of the night. Expectations were set high that after 4 years of turmoil and a war on norms and institutions and the telling of constant lies and Trump's mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic with 230,000 dead, surely there would be an uprising against him. Surely there would be a repudiation. And in the end, we might get the defeat of Trump, but not the defeat of Trumpism. And I think the big loser there is America. We saw that millions and millions of people were still willing to vote for this president, despite the racism, despite all the horrors that we've witnessed. I think it also means that we're bowling towards some of those scenarios of legal battles and street protests.
As Charlie was speaking here, the Trump campaign now says it will immediately request a recount in Wisconsin. The vote has not been finalized. They're within about 1% of each other. I don't know what the tipping point would be.
And so on. But I think in another way that America also lost is that Republicans seem to be on course to retain control of the Senate. So even if Joe Biden becomes president, he'll be up against Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate. It'll be very hard for him to get anything done. And that will produce the kind of gridlock and dysfunction in Washington, which feeds a lot of these perceptions that the system is broken. And that gave rise to Trumpism in the first place. So we seem to be trapped in a negative feedback loop.
And memories of Mitch McConnell in 2008, I think, saying his whole strategy and objective for the next 4 years would simply be to make Barack Obama a one-term president, not to do anything, because you wouldn't want to give him a legislative achievement. Just before we leave the Trump moment, I just wondered, there was a reading that said actually there was something rather desperate about it, and he's been tweeting since, saying they're finding Biden votes all over the place in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, so bad for our country, he tweeted. People wondering if, in a funny way, this is Trump signalling that he knows it's over.
Yeah, I mean, he's a man-child, he's a narcissist. Certainly it's reminiscent of a 10-year-old boy who's lost a game of football and is crying foul. And On the other hand, I wouldn't be too sure that he genuinely thinks he's beaten, because he's a great believer in the power of positive thinking, the name of a book he was always devoted to. I think he constantly projects optimism that he's always going to be the winner, couldn't contemplate defeat. And I think very importantly in all of this, his campaign aides were feeding him selective opinion polls, which showed him either level or beating Joe Biden. So I do believe this may have come as a genuine surprise to Trump. I think he had bad information and really thought he was on the verge of a second victory, especially also because of the big crowds he draws at his rallies. I mean, if you spend some time at one of those, you would probably walk out thinking, oh yeah, this guy is in good shape.
But let's talk about the actual results, the ones we do have. I mean, whatever way you slice it, they weren't what the polls pointed to. Big solid leads in some of these states, 8-9 points. Instead, it's an absolute squeaker in, for example, the likes of Michigan and Wisconsin.
Michigan is still a big question mark. We'll get to why in a second. Wisconsin has been where the game has been afoot. This morning in the early morning hours, electoral votes 10...
You know, even if Biden wins, it won't be by the kind of numbers that were predicted. There was a poll the other day saying 17 points ahead in Wisconsin, polls that gave him quite handy leads in Texas and Florida and North Carolina, smaller, but, you know, suggesting he was on course to win. And they're just completely out of whack. I mean, on last week on the podcast, we spoke to Tom McCarthy, who wisely said, look, don't just follow the polls. And there are other signs out there about turnout and registration. Trouble is, even those signs did, in a way, point to a chunky, healthy win for Joe Biden. So what went wrong here with how this came as how the night played out differently from what many, I think, had been led to expect?
I think it's still a bit of a mystery. I mean, I think it's worth bearing in mind when we get the final results, Biden might win the Electoral College relatively comfortably. He will also obviously win the popular vote. But yes, certainly at state level, a state such as Ohio, for example, Trump won much more comfortably than polls suggested.
This is already a statement tonight about how Joe Biden is performing differently than Hillary Clinton, outperforming Hillary Clinton in the industrial Midwest. Look at this, 54.5 to 44.3.
Some polls showed Trump behind in Florida, and he won that fairly easily in the end. It suggests a system that's broken. It suggests maybe the coronavirus pandemic made things even harder because... One veteran journalist put it to me, look, you know, these polls, all they tell you is who was fool enough to answer, you know, a robocall on their landline. And these days, most people ignore landline calls when they don't know who it is. So I think it certainly will mean more soul searching and self-analysis for the polling industry. So I think it's another reminder, as 2016 was, to take a holistic look at all this. The traditional polls are just really one piece in the jigsaw.
And to get into specific states, I mean, Florida is really in a way sui generis, isn't it? It is very much its own thing and has developed very kind of unique idiosyncratic features in terms of partly its demographic makeup and so on. Do you have in your mind an explanation for why those states that, you know, some had thought might be flipped by Joe Biden instead stayed firmly with Trump? And I'm thinking of Texas, Florida, and it seems North Carolina.
The Trump campaign, I think, was well organized and had put 4 years of effort into turning out even more, particularly white voters in rural areas. I think also Joe Biden was not the most inspiring candidate. I mean, satirists say, you know, he's the good enough candidate. If this election had had a Barack Obama-like figure, perhaps those states would have been very different. It would not just have been a negative vote against someone. There would have been a tremendous positive surge in favor of someone. But Biden is not that man, and I think Democrats are still searching for their new Obama. I think, you know, states such as Texas, probably expectations were set too high. It's been a Republican stronghold for a long time. Florida, expectations were definitely set too high. And what really seems to have cost Biden there is Cuban Americans and immigrants from Venezuela as well. Biden performed significantly worse in Miami than Hillary Clinton had done. But underlying it all, America remains a pretty conservative country in many ways. And there are millions of people out there who have made peace with voting for Trump. And perhaps many of them dislike the bad behavior and the vulgarity, the accusations of sexual harassment, and all the other things. But nevertheless, they like low taxes, and they like his Supreme Court justices. They were willing to vote for him again, despite everything.
This gets us to one of the big demographic sort of puzzles. And, you know, our source for this is the exit poll data, and maybe people will question that. But it did suggest that he grew his vote among groups that people thought would definitely not be in the column for him. And I'm thinking of, you know, women. I'm thinking of African-Americans, men and women. He doubled his vote. Admittedly, it was low before. 4% doubles to 8%. Much higher still among African-American men. And one of the big stories of the night, this success he was finding with Hispanic voters. I mean, on one hand, you could now be sort of scratching your head thinking, OK, so why did Hispanic voters like him? But the other way of thinking about it is, what is the whole sort of political science industry, pundits, pollsters, everyone at fault for even thinking there are these demographic categories and that people might vote accordingly? Is that kind of perhaps an outdated way of thinking? Or have you got in your mind an explanation for why some of these groups might have been drawn to Donald Trump?
I think there's still some validity to looking at the patterns, because sometimes they're so striking. Biden and Democrats generally obviously still have overwhelming support among African-Americans, especially African-American women. To me, one of the most striking characteristics is the education gap. White men who did not go to university turn up in huge numbers for Trump, and particularly among Hispanic men. He seems to have had appeal, and there's been some commentary around, does he project a certain machismo, masculinity that appeals more to Latino men than women, in the same way that it certainly appeals more to white men than white women. But the final point I'd make is it has been another reminder that no demographic group is a monolith. Less attention has been paid to the diversity within the Hispanic community. And any Hispanic person will tell you the tremendous internal differences there. And Florida is perhaps the shining example of that.
Yes, no, that's what I meant when, in a way, I was saying maybe we should just retire the term and talk about individual communities rather than Hispanics or Latinos. But let's talk about where we are now. People listening to this will want to know, in effect, what's going to happen. We are, as we record, waiting on results from several states. Pennsylvania is still out there, along with Michigan. As we record, the Associated Press has just called the state of Wisconsin for Joe Biden, which is a crucial 10 electoral college votes for him. Although, as we heard earlier on, the Trump campaign planned to demand a recount in the state. Also, Arizona, the Associated Press, normally very sober about these matters, called it for Joe Biden as well early on in the day. Other news organizations have not followed it. There's Nevada, where the lead is down to just 6,000 or 7,000 votes, waiting for some more results to come in. They say they may not come in until Thursday, maybe even later. And there's still North Carolina and Georgia. You know, I know everyone does these mathematical equations in their head to work out the electoral map. What is the path that you now see? And is it looking clearer and clearer one way and another for Joe Biden?
Yeah, there are different combinations. I mean, one of the most surprising possibilities is that Joe Biden might lose both Florida and Pennsylvania in this election and yet still win. And I say that's surprising because those two states got huge amounts of attention from both the candidates and the media. You know, Biden's victory in Arizona, I think that was the first full state which actually flipped from Republican to Democrat. That has really opened up lots of possibilities for him. So I think it may be Biden, for example, wins Nevada and Michigan and also Maine. Off the top of my head, I think those alone might be enough.
And because I began this talking about worriers, is there a legitimate reason to worry that every single one of them could go the other way and go to Donald Trump and Biden ends up the loser?
Yeah, if we've learned anything from 2020, we should worry because the unexpected can happen. going all the way back to the Iowa caucuses, which turned into chaos with no clear winner, followed by a global pandemic that upended everything. The general rule of this year seems to be if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. I would wait until the fat lady sings, so to speak. But the graver concern really is just the nature of one of the candidates here, the fact that Trump will try to use even the merest whisper of illegitimacy or, you know, supposed claims of ballot papers found in a bin somewhere or whatever it is to really spread a torrent of disinformation on social media that may well be backed up by Fox News. And the real problem of a very close election is that whoever wins, there'll be one side that regards it as illegitimate and doesn't want to accept the outcome, and that just bodes ill for the future operation of the system.
Well, that brings me really to exactly where I wanted to sort of conclude our conversation, because this question about how whoever wins could heal the country, and I suppose when we say that we do mean Joe Biden, because Donald Trump has not taken much interest in playing that role. A standard line from Biden recently, something he said a lot, was, "I am a proud Democrat."
But while I'll be a Democratic candidate, I will be an American president. I'll work hard for those who didn't support me.
But I'll be a president for everyone. If he does come through this and win, is that even going to be possible? Or, partly because of what we saw the president do today, will people say, no, you're not the legitimate president. This was stolen. It was fraudulent. There'll be conspiracy theories and all kinds of memes online, etc. You can imagine it. You know, is that job of healing even possible for Biden if he comes through this?
I'd like to be optimistic, but I'd say it's a very uphill struggle. I mean, I think he's got a better chance in that role than someone like Barack Obama would because of race, or than Hillary Clinton would because of gender. But even so, I fear probably even before Biden has sworn in, there would be an avalanche of conservative media attacks, not least because conservative media thrives in opposition and tearing down the Democratic leader. Trump, armed with his Twitter account, armed still with the Make America Great Again movement that has clearly survived and even thrived in all this, will make it pretty impossible. And also, as I mentioned, Republicans still controlling the Senate will be another headache. And then on top of all of that, Biden will be under pressure from his left wing to be radical and to take action. And, you know, every statement that they make will then be magnified by conservative media. So I'm looking for a silver lining here, but it is difficult. People thought in this year of multiple crises that perhaps this election would strike a decisive blow either way, and we'd have a clearer picture of where America stands. But if anything, it's just really underlined and ratified the tribal political divisions. It actually makes the 2016 election result look like less of a freak, less of a fluke, more a preview of where this country is, just hopelessly polarized.
David, listen, you and I are about to join a panel of our colleagues for a Guardian Live event to discuss what has happened and what we know, which could be very different even from what we know now, because it's moving minute by minute. So I will talk to you again soon. But on behalf of the listeners, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, as we've said throughout this episode, there is still a way to go before we know, and we're under no illusion that it will be simple. I will be back here on Friday when Lauren Gambino and I will talk through some of the most interesting results in the other big contest that's just happened, the battle for control of Congress, the House and the Senate. That same day, I'll be popping up on our sister podcast, Today in Focus, to take a look into the long-term impact of this election and what is next for the United States of America. So do tune in on Friday as we finish off what is perhaps unsurprisingly been a crazy week in American politics. The election is over, but the jury is still out. The producer is Danielle Stevens, and I'm Jonathan Friedland. Look after yourselves, and thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.